Hey guys, it's Albert. We got a huge show coming for you this week. I'm going to take you through the first half of the first round, everything that I've heard there. Then we got a special guest in to do a live mock draft with me. And as always, we'll wrap things up with all of your questions in a six-pack. Let's go. All right, welcome in. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We're coming to you 2 days later than we normally do this week. And I wish I could tell you so I could give you more up-to-date information. That's actually not why. It's because a giant pine tree fell off of someone else's property onto my property, onto power lines, blocking my driveway, which, quite honestly, has taken us 3 days here to get everything back in working order. Everything is finally back in working order. We got a great guest for you coming this week. We're going to actually do like a live mock draft. I wanted to give you guys that real good conversation there with a recurring guest of ours. But as I always do this time of year, I know what you want is information. I know what you want is for me to take you through some of the stuff that I'm hearing. And so right now I feel comfortable bringing you through about the first half of the first round. I'll take you through pick by pick where I see things going. And with the first pick, I don't think there's any question where this one is headed. This one's been headed in that direction forever. The relationship building's been going on there. As we wrote on Monday, Joe Burrow has had his time with the Cincinnati Bengals maxed out every week. That's 3 one-hour meetings every week, really going back to March. The Bengals are ready to take Joe Burrow. Zach Taylor is ready to stake his future as a head coach in the NFL on Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow almost certainly will be a Cincinnati Bengal in just, when you're listening to this, in 6 days. And then I think the second overall pick, probably close to his academic at this point. I'd be surprised that the Redskins can get the right kind of offer for the number two overall pick. They did kick the tires in the quarterbacks. They have kicked the tires in the quarterbacks. I don't think one of those quarterbacks is going to get them to give up on Dwayne Haskins. I do think Kyle Allen is a nice competitive piece for them to have in the building for Dwayne Haskins. And so the second pick to me is just as academic. I think Chase Young of Ohio State winds up going to the Cincinnati Bengals. And then at three, I think that's really where the draft starts. And the Lions would love to move off their spot there. I'm not sure the market has been through the roof for the third overall pick, maybe not quite where the Lions had hoped it would be. And as we've talked about, really going back to January, so much of it depended on Tua Tagovailoa getting hot, on Justin Herbert getting hot. And it's those guys are good prospects, but I'm not sure that they've really kind of caught fire the way that they would have needed to for the Lions to be able to get a really aggressive haul for that pick. And so, could they move it? Maybe. And maybe somebody decides we need to get in front of Miami for Herbert. And maybe somebody is laying in the weeds with an offer for Bob Quinn. And we see that materialize next week. Right now, I think if Quinn is going to move the third overall pick, and remember, Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia, both those guys in the NFL for about 2 decades, a little less than 2 decades for Matt, a little more than 2 decades for Quinn. Neither of those guys have ever had a top five pick. And so I think, they'd love to be able to get a Jeffrey Okuda, to get a Derek Brown, to get an Isaiah Simmons at 5 or 6, rather than having to do it at 3. I think there's a chance that they wind up just sticking at 3 and taking Jeff Okuda, the corner from Ohio State, Isaiah Simmons, the linebacker from Clemson, maybe Derek Brown, the defensive tackle from Auburn. The fourth overall pick, I've heard tackle here. I've heard Simmons here. Mekhi Becton's become a name to watch here. Tristan Wirfs has become a name to watch there. Isaiah Simmons is so interesting because you got the three Patriot teams there, the three Patriot connected teams, and the Lions, the Giants, and the Dolphins picking 3, 4, 5. Simmons is fascinating to me because I think so much of what he becomes as a pro is going to be based on the plan that whatever team drafts him has for him and how they use him. And being able to move him around, I think, is really going to be the key. He's a freakish athlete. He's not necessarily a traditional linebacker. He's a different type of player. So there's just sort of a different dynamic with him. The Dolphins at 5, like everything you hear of late has sort of pointed towards them taking Justin Herbert at 5. I don't have any reason not to believe that. it's possible there's a lot of smoke here and maybe they really are comfortable with Tua's medicals. It's just, it seems like you've heard so many things in the other direction over the last few months where, you know, maybe they feel more comfortable taking Justin Herbert because the medical's cleaner. You know, I've heard from different people that Brian Flores and, you know, the system he comes from in New England certainly adheres to this, that he's looking for more of a prototype at the position. That's what Justin Herbert is. And I've also heard from a couple of different people that Dan Marino actually had had high marks on Justin Herbert. He, of course, sort of was part of that process at the Senior Bowl. Herbert had a huge Senior Bowl week, so take that for what it's worth. The Chargers are interesting. Tom Telesco's always been excellent at kind of keeping it, holding his cards close to the vest. Yeah, I have heard a little buzz that this could be a tackle. You know, the likelihood is, you know, I think it has been all along that it'd be a quarterback, but maybe they look at Herbert, they look at Tua, and they are concerned about the inconsistency on Herbert's tape. They are concerned about the injuries with Tua, and maybe they surprise everybody and take a tackle. And if Tua gets past six, I'm not positive where he goes. You know, at seven, and I, you know, look, like, I think that this for Matt Rhule, and we're going to talk more about this with our guests, but to me, this is going to be, this is like the sort of pick where you want to sort of signal to your organization what we're looking for in a player. And Derek Brown's somebody that more teams than people realize really like. And you don't hear as much about him as you hear about a Chase Young or you've heard about an Isaiah Simmons, but I'm telling you guys, like, this is a player that is very, very well regarded in NFL circles. So it wouldn't surprise me if they sit there at seven and take him. If Simmons were to fall there, maybe they look at him. Again, we'll talk more about that with our guest. You know, at eight with the Cardinals, you know, the CeeDee Lamb hype train had kind of, I think, really got going there over the first 2 months of this process in January and February and into March. Kyler Murray, of course, a former teammate of CeeDee Lamb's, has advocated for CeeDee Lamb in the building. This seems to me like another one, offensive line, defensive line. You know, I'd been hot on the offensive tackles here, maybe Jedrick Wills because they got DJ Humphreys who can play or who is their left tackle. Maybe they would be okay drafting a right tackle there. One thing that you have heard more recently is they've done a lot of work on the interior defensive linemen too. So if Derek Brown were to fall in their lap, you know, would they consider Javon Kinlaw? Maybe. At nine, the Jaguars, whether or not they sit there and say, okay, we're going to take an offensive tackle if the elite defensive players are gone, I don't know. I think they would like to move that pick. And maybe they become the hot spot for somebody to come up and go and get an offensive tackle. I have heard that, and there's some quiet stuff on this, that maybe they'd be looking to even accumulate some picks for 2021. And that would sort of put you in this wheelhouse where you maybe could be the Trevor Lawrence team in 2021. And so they've got so many needs. Their roster's a little bit messy right now. You know, I certainly think that the Jaguars are going to try to play it safe here. I think they take a lineman if they sit at nine, offensive or defensive lineman if they sit at nine. If they trade down, you know, maybe they look at the corner or receiver that they need. At 10, the Browns, I know Andrew Berry said we're not taking a tackle. Everything I've heard is in conflict in that, with that, that they are taking a tackle. You know, Andrew Thomas is a name that's been linked to them. He'd be a nice, safe play for them. I don't think there's anything wrong with Andrew Thomas, which is crazy because he seems like we've heard less about, it seems like we've heard less about him than any other player at that position. You hear more about Becton, you hear more about Wirfs, you hear more about Wills. Thomas has came into the college season as, you know, a potential top 10, top 15 pick, and he ended the college season there. He's been consistent. He's a good kid. He's, you know, I think everybody looks at him as a very, very safe play at left tackle. Doesn't maybe have the mean streak that you see in some offensive linemen, but a really, really good player. I mean, I think the Browns would be do well to come away with like a long-term left tackle like that to pair with Jack Conklin, who's still, I think, just 24 years old, is sort of their bookends for the future. At 11, the Jets. And the Jets are fascinating to me because Joe Douglas, this is his first, you know, he's been the GM there for a while now, but this is going to be his first draft pick, the 11th overall pick if they stick there. And I think you'd be of a mind to take an offensive lineman. But one thing I've been cautioned, like the people who know him say best player available, right? So best player available for Joe Douglas there. And if it's not a tackle, what would it be? I'm not sure it'd be a receiver.
I know people are saying that, obviously they lose Robbie Anderson. I'm not sure it'll be a receiver. I would not be surprised if it's not a tackle, if maybe it's a defensive lineman or it's a corner. And so I don't know. I know because of where the Jets, are right now, because they've got the young quarterback, because of losing Robbie Anderson, there's this feeling that, receivers way up there in the wish list. I think they'll get a receiver at some point. 11 seems less likely to me. The Raiders at 12, I think the Raiders will try to move down with one of their two picks, either 12 or 19, to try and recoup the second round that they're losing, which was part of the Khalil Mack trade. At 12, I've heard specifically that they're looking for a Z receiver. Jerry Jeudy would make some sense in that regard. And the other position, I think they address it with one of these two picks. If they were to stick with both of them, would be corner. And so this is, I think, where you start to see that territory for C.J. Henderson come into play. At 13, the Niners, I think another team that might be looking to move down at some point. They would love to get a left tackle to be the heir apparent to Joe Staley. If someone like Tristan Wirfs were to fall to them, that might make perfect sense because they could start him at guard, and then maybe he's your left tackle of the future down the line. We'll see. It does sound to me like they want to keep Mike McGlinchey at right tackle, so finding a left tackle of the future would be interesting. Henry Ruggs is a name to keep an eye on there. Henry Ruggs would be a very, very interesting player in Kyle Shanahan's offense. They have the infrastructure for those sorts of players, the way Kyle builds his offense. We've seen it with Taylor Gabriel. We've seen it with Marquise Goodwin. So Henry Ruggs would be a player that I would just sort of keep an eye on there with the Niners at 13. And they are another team that I think will look to deal down with one of their two first-round picks. They've got this huge hole. No second rounder, no third rounder, no fourth rounder, thanks to the D Ford, Emmanuel Sanders trades. And so they're another team that I would look for to move down with one of their two picks, maybe more likely 31 than 13. We finally have a trade-up team here. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I've heard that they are going to try to get help for Tom Brady in the way of an offensive lineman. I think you'd be reaching on the second tier of offensive linemen, and I think there are four tackles in that group. We've talked about the Becton, the Thomas, the Wirfs, the Wills group. Well, the second group has Austin Jackson from USC, Ezra Cleveland from Boise, Josh Jones from Houston in it. And, and Isaiah Wilson from Georgia would be the other one. When do those guys start coming off the board? I think if Tampa can move up and get one of the top four, they do that. Do they reach for one of the second tier ones? I think this is where that starts to come into play a little bit, maybe a decision to be made there for him. And I would also not rule out the Bucs taking a quarterback somewhere along the line. Jacob Eason's name came up as someone who might be a good fit for Bruce Arians' offense. At 15, you get the Broncos, who, if they stick there, it wouldn't surprise me if this becomes a Jeudy, Lamb, Ruggs team, one of the top receivers there. But I have heard that they are kicking around the idea of moving up, that maybe Garrett Bowles' days in Denver are numbered, and that maybe they would look for their left tackle of the future somewhere this year. So it's a good tackle group. Again, four in the top tier, I think four in the second tier, and all eight of those guys I think wind up going in the top 40 picks or so. And then finally, and we'll wrap it up here before we get to our guest, 16, the Atlanta Falcons. I would look for the Falcons to sniff around about moving up. That's nothing new. That's Thomas Dimitroff has always sort of run the draft that way. They've always investigated the idea of making massive swings to go up. If he does it, I would think it would be for an elite defensive player. Maybe Isaiah Simmons slips. Maybe it's him. Maybe it's a short move up for somebody like C.J. Henderson. I certainly could see the Falcons, making a play for some sort of defensive player going up the board. If they stick where they are, again, corner, the Christian Fulton types there, if C.J. Henderson's still there, of course. And then maybe somebody like Kalavon Chaisson from LSU, a pass rusher who I think who's a good fit for what they do defensively. All right. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. At some point, I may wind up going through the whole first round, but you guys have heard enough of my voice. We're now going to throw it to our guest, our special guest, good friend of mine. We're going to mock it up right after this.
So we're going to bring my buddy Andy Gresh from WPRO in Providence. Guy, as you guys know, I worked with in Boston for a whole bunch of years. He works on CBS Radio. He does play-by-play for the CAA, right?
And yeah, it used to be the CAA. Now it's UMass or UConn or basically whomever needs a color analyst that they don't want to fly into New England.
Big football guy, Gresh, and a former college football player himself. So he's well acquainted with the college game and, of course, the NFL game. And so I thought it'd be fun if we brought Gresh in as one of our more regular guests, and we did a little bit of a mock draft here for you. And so, Gresh, I'm assuming you spent all day putting together your big board for this as we work through the teams. And let me just set some ground rules really quick.
Okay.
So we want this to be true to the team. So, you know, if like let's say you're, I'm trying to like look at our Arizona. Like, don't take a quarterback. They took Kyler Murray first overall. I guess you almost can't say that, though, Gresh, right? Like, because they did take a quarterback after taking a quarterback.
Yeah, that is true. But you know what it does, though, Bert, is it presents to us the scenarios with which these teams are going to have in front of them. And I think in the top 10, there's going to be a lot of discussion about trades.
Right. And you know, you've got like kind of like that caveat, which is that they're not doing this in person this year. So it's going to be difficult to pull off trades, or more difficult to pull off trades too, if guys are slipping a little bit. So for our purposes, we're not going to do trades here. We'll just kind of play it straight. But we've got our ideas of who we would take and everything else. And we're going to go through this. And so because it's 2020, I don't carry cash, or I rarely have cash. So I don't have a coin on me, Gresh. So here's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
And unfortunately, just so we're on the level here, I'm going to pick two numbers, and then I'm going to say to Gresh, pick one of them. If he gets one of them, I'm going to give you the option to pick first or second. Okay?
Okay.
So if you want to pick first, pick first. If you want to pick second, pick second. And then we'll go alternating picks all the way through 10. We're not going to do snake draft style here. It's just alternating picks all the way through. And so to keep it on the level, I'll write the number down. Okay. So Gresh, you give me two numbers. I'll write one of the two numbers down. Then you pick one of the numbers. And then if you pick right, you get to pick what you want to do. Or if you get it wrong, then I get to pick what I want to do. So give me two numbers, just two random numbers.
4 and 7.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to write those two numbers down. I wrote those two numbers down. I'm going to circle one of them. All right.
All right.
And then I'm going to ask you which number I circled. Then I'll hold it up for the Zoom meeting that we're in. And then we'll go. Okay. All right. What number is it?
7.
It is actually 4. Can you see that?
Yeah, it's 4. It's some Jedi mind trick stuff.
It is actually 4. Actually, you know what? That's my high school football number. So that's why.
Oh, my God. Here we go. And I was 70 in high school. So, right. So we were halfway there.
There it is.
Okay, so you're up first.
I'll take the first pick. Yeah. And so with the first pick in the 2020 NFL draft, I'm not in my basement like Roger's going to be next week. But with the first pick in the 2020 draft, the Cincinnati Bengals select Joe Burrow, the LSU quarterback. This is simple, right, Gresh? I mean, like, I don't think you don't need to complicate this.
No, nope.
I loved what I saw from him in the fall. He kept getting better. That's the thing about him. Love the makeup of the kid. Like, it's just, I mean, maybe he doesn't have like, maybe physically he's not Carson Palmer coming out, right? But like, he's good enough physically, and he's got just like the mindset, the production, the accuracy, the feel, like he moves in the pocket like Brady, like just all of it. It's all there. If I'm the Bengals, it's, the easy thing to do is the right thing to do, and that's take Joe Burrow first overall.
One word describes Joe Burrow: moxie. And that's what Cincinnati needs to sell. When he walks in a room, he looks like a cool mofo. When he wins the national title and he's ripping a cigar with his uniform on, looking like old Joe Willie, he plays the part. And look, I don't think there's any real difference in a bust factor with him than there would be anybody else at the top of the draft, given what we know about him. But he struts that ass on the field like he's the number one pick, and that's a part of the deal as well. That's something to me, Bert, that Cincinnati desperately needs.
Here's what I love about it. I think you'll appreciate this too. Mm-hmm. I early in the this was actually back in the fall while the season was still going on.
I asked like a guy who knows that program really well about Joe Burrow. We were talking about the kid, like who he is, right? And he said to me, well, just put it this way. A kid from rural Ohio is the alpha in that program. Wow. In Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. A kid from rural Ohio went down to Louisiana and became the alpha in that program. And it was such a perfect way of explaining why you take Joe Burrow first overall.
Like no question.
Program changer for that. And that's a good program to begin with. But we know how long they struggled on offense, how long they were running game and defense. And he turned it upside down this year. So Joe Burrow, the right pick, first overall to the Cincinnati Bengals. Gresh, you're on the clock.
All right, so with the number two pick in the 2020 NFL draft, the Washington Redskins don't screw it up and take Chase Young, defensive end, Ohio State. Bert, there's so much talk around what could they do, what should they do, do they trade out? Look, I don't know if this guy is going to be Julius Peppers, but there are not a lot of guys who have the whole package to maybe be like a Julius Peppers. And if you look at Peppers, the numbers don't blow you away, but what he was able to do at his peak, what he was able to do late into his career because he was a freak of an athlete. And to me, that's what I see in Chase Young, the ability to be that kind of player. You could still put some weight on him. I hope Washington doesn't overthink it, Bert. But as we know in that program, they tend to do some stuff that makes you scratch your head.
And look, Ron Rivera is a very – I thought that was a very sensible hire for them. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, there are shades of the Niners last year there. And I'm not saying with the overall team, right? I'm not saying with the overall team. But, like, Nick Bosa was dropped into a defensive line group that was loaded with first-round picks, right? So you had DeForest Buckner, you had Eric Armstead, you had Solomon Thomas, you had Dee Ford, right? Look at what Chase Young would be walking into. You have – Daron Payne, you have Jonathan Allen, you have Montez Sweat, you have Ryan Kerrigan. Four first-round picks are on that defensive line, and he's joining that group. And so it's very similar. Like, I think there's like just like where you saw with the Niners going into last year a lot of potential on the defensive line, and then you put in a generational talent in Nick Bosa, and it sort of takes it to the next level. Same thing here, right? Like Chase Young, generational talent. You add him to the group, he's going to make those guys around him that much better.
Yeah, I'm completely with you on that. And I think in a division that is geared toward having Dak Prescott and Saquon Barkley loading up on defensive linemen, I don't think that's ever really a bad way to go. But in that particular division and the way Philly can be a bit of a mind screw on offense, load up on those defensive linemen because Lord knows you're going to get them in third down at some point and then turn them loose.
Okay, so now with the third overall pick.
Oh.
The Detroit Lions select Jeffrey Okuda, corner, Ohio State. It's not a homer pick. It's a need pick, okay? It's not me being – I'm not going to sing the fight song, although I will note that these top three picks now were once teammates. The top three picks were teammates in the 2017 Ohio State Buckeyes. Jeff Okuda, to me, fills the need. Like, so if you look at where the Lions are, they signed Jamie Collins in free agency. They signed Danny Shelton in free agency. They've sort of shored up. So I think Derek Brown, Isaiah Simmons, and Jeff Okuda are all right on the same level, right?
Fair.
They did sign Desmond Trufant, but I don't think Desmond Trufant is any sort of long-term answer for you at corner if you're the Lions. You traded Darius Slay. And I think we saw with Matt Patricia, while he was in New England, how he valued the corner position. He was there when they signed Stephon Gilmore. And so I think getting a top shelf corner, if you want to just look at it, Bob Quinn's never had a top five pick before. Matt Patricia's never been with a team that's had a top five pick before. I think you have to look at like what they really value. I think both those guys would value having a top shelf corner.
And I am completely in agreement with you on this. Everybody is thinking here Isaiah Simmons. I think Isaiah Simmons would go to kind of flounder in Matt Patricia's defense right now. And look, if there is an edict and Patricia is operating under the thought process that if I don't win, I'm going to be out of here. What did he do? We know he signed Trey Flowers last year. He went and got Daron Harmon. He's loading up on those Patriot players who know the system and can help other guys adapt to it. And when you bring in a corner like Okuda, it can be as simple as go cover that guy if they need to, easy to integrate him into the scheme and what they're trying to build there in Detroit. And to me, it's a home run pick. Not to dog out Isaiah Simmons. I just think it, in a Matt Patricia mind and trying to figure out, I worry with Isaiah Simmons, is he going to get ruined potentially because he's going to go somewhere and they're going to ask him to do too much. And that would have been my fear, him going to Detroit with Okuda. It's go over there and take that guy out of the game.
Pretty simple. All right.
Yep.
So we got another Patriot alum on the clock now. The Giants with Joe Judge, their new head coach at number four.
Okay. You could go a lot of different directions here with the Giants, but with the number four pick of the 2020 NFL draft, the New York Giants take Tristan Wirfs, offensive tackle, Iowa. Look, would Isaiah Simmons be sexy? You could have him as a joker and move him all over the place. Absolutely. But at what point are we finally going to get this offensive line right with the New York Giants? And we know the history of Dave Gettleman. There are draftable offensive tackles in the top five. Now, I know we said no trades. I could definitely see the Giants sliding down a couple of spots because, to me, I could have gone Mekhi Becton here and been okay. I think if the Giants end up, Burt, with either Wirfs or Becton, plug them in at left tackle, or plug them in at right tackle. Let's stop farting around. We know you got Nate Solder. You could even make the move to take Nate Solder and move him to the other side or move him inside if you want and put a left tackle over there. They need to find the guy of the future because they got the running back, they got the quarterback. Now go get the big left tackle and the guy that you can save money on for 5 years and build an offensive line around.
Okay, so like here's the to me, like what's so interesting about the offensive tackle group, right? Is you got Mekhi Becton, who I think sort of boom or bust, right? Can he keep the weight off? Is he going to be more consistent, right?
Yep.
You got Andrew Thomas from Georgia, who may not have the highest ceiling in the world, but man, like he's just going to be a solid left tackle for somebody, right? And then you've got Wirfs, and Wirfs like could play a bunch of different positions, and you're not sure exactly what he is, but he's coming from a really good program at Iowa, and so to me, he's not as safe as like. He's safe, maybe not as safe as Andrew Thomas, and he's got boom potential, maybe not as much as Mekhi Becton. So is he your left tackle? Maybe, maybe not. But at worst, you probably have a really good guard or a really good right tackle, right?
And so you
do have some flexibility there.
Yeah, and they got to figure out what Nate Solder's going to be. He is getting up there in years. He is a little bit older. And Bert, you're right. Maybe they bring in Wirfs, get him integrated into playing NFL-level football, realize, okay, this guy can translate. You know, a little bit of kind of like with the Patriots with Isaiah Wynn, it was, let's see if he can play. Let's put him inside. Let's check the footwork, and then we can move him out. But I just look at the Giants, and, yeah, they need defense. There's no question. They have got to shore up the offensive line. They can't go through another year where we're sitting here going, how come there ain't nobody who can protect the quarterback there with the Giants?
And yeah, and I agree. And we've seen Dave Gettleman's history is to invest in the lines of scrimmage. And, you know, again, like I look at, you know, what's so interesting about it? You talk about investing in the offensive line. You know what? Like, you know, when you look at like Carson Wentz and you look at Patrick Mahomes and you look at Lamar Jackson and what those guys, like, what do those guys have in common? They play behind great tackles, right? Like, so like Mahomes has Fisher and he has Schwartz, huge second year breakout. Lamar Jackson was playing behind Ronnie Stanley at left tackle and Orlando Brown at right tackle. Huge second year, right? Carson Wentz, Jason Peters and Lane Johnson, huge second year, right? And then like look at Baker Mayfield. What was the biggest problem for him last year?
Nobody blocked for him.
Right.
Nobody
Sam
blocked
Darnold.
For him.
Sam Darnold.
Same thing. Nobody to block for him.
So I'm with you. I think when you got a young quarterback like Daniel Jones, smart to invest in the offensive line.
Now, quickly, if it goes the way we said it did, Bert, where it's Burrow, Young, and Okuda off the board, this is where the Giants may end up really starting the draft. Because if teams are thinking, uh-oh, Tua or Herbert's going to go off the board here, or someone's going to move up and grab the guy that I really want, I wonder what the Giants – that's why I suggest – maybe they end up sliding down because if it goes the way we predicted it, that number four spot, somebody is going to say, I got to go get my quarterback now or else I'm going to lose him.
Right, because Miami becomes the pressure point for the quarterbacks.
Right, and that's just a quick stop.
Yeah, and the Lions, I think the Lions would love to move the third pick. If they can't get value for it, then all of a sudden the Giants might be able to capitalize on that. I'm with you. So with the fifth overall pick, the Miami Dolphins select Justin Herbert, quarterback, Oregon.
Wow. Yeah.
So I love Tua as a player. I really do. I'm going to give you a history lesson here, Gresh.
Ooh, I like this.
So the last... Let's go back 10 years, okay? Over the last 10 years, every single quarterback who's come into the NFL with major injury history has gotten hurt again. Sam Bradford in 10, Jake Locker in 11, Robert Griffin in 12, Marcus Mariota in 15, Carson Wentz in 16, Deshaun Watson in 17. Every single one of them who came into the league with extensive medical issues got hurt again. And I just look at it, and I love Tua as a player, and I'd want to take him. I've heard Miami's got misgivings about his medical history, and I just have to go with that. You know, like I look at Herbert, and I'm not sold on him either. And I'd be tempted if I was Miami to punt till 2021, when Trevor Lawrence is coming out, when Justin Fields will probably come out, but. You know, looking at the current landscape, the hard thing about that is then you're betting on being bad again. And I don't think that that's what Flo wants to do down there. And I think you take Herbert, and then you look at going and getting yourself an offensive tackle later in the first round. They draft again, I believe, at 18 and 25. Maybe you get somebody like USC's Austin Jackson, who's a second-tier tackle but a good player. You start building up the offensive line after that. So I'm going with Justin Herbert, number five.
Yep, 18 and 26. Miami gets 26. To reload again there. And, you know, this is interesting because I'm with you. I love Tua. I mean, he's got – if he doesn't get hurt, we're not talking about Joe Burrow, number one, even if he went on a run. It's Joe Burrow and then Tua, and there's a big discussion there. Here's the thing that scares me about Justin Herbert is I haven't seen enough clutch from him. And that's – I keep going back to, again, the old college football player in me says, when you're about to talk yourself out of someone, go flip on the tape. The problem is the tape you watch of Tua may not physically be the guy that's there. And when I watch Justin, I don't see enough clutch. And I'm with you. That puts Miami in a real tricky spot because – if they go with Tua, they make everybody happy, but you've got to start him. And if he gets hurt, it's catastrophic to your franchise. Whereas, you know, Herbert from Oregon might just be a bust, or he might just be okay. And they've had too much just okay quarterback play down there in Miami. All right, Bert. Well, then to me, this kind of makes it easy with the number six pick in the 2020 NFL draft. The LA Chargers take Tua Tagovailoa. Everything we talked about still applies, but here's the thing. He's going to sell tickets and he's going to give people in LA hope. And if it doesn't work out, that might be the one spot where people are like, well, how could you blame them?
Yeah. And I think you have to take a swing. I mean, I know you hear the stuff on Tyrod, and I think Tyrod could probably get you through a year if you had to get through a year. But, you know, we've heard this before. We heard it 2 years ago with Tyrod when he was with the Browns.
Yep.
Oh, you know, like they love Tyrod. You know, everything's they were taking a quarterback all along, right? You know, so like we've heard this before. I just think the Chargers are in that position where it's you almost have to do it, and I think you almost have to get a guy into the program because they have a good team right now. Like right now, if they can shore up their they went and got Brian Bulaga. They went and got Trey Turner. If they can find another tackle who can play, like somewhere along the line, now you're talking about a team that's kind of taken care of its biggest problem, which was the offensive line, has Mike Williams, Hunter Henry, Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler, Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, like Derwin James.
Yeah.
That is a good team. And so I don't know if you can like afford to sort of tread water at quarterback if you're them. Like you take your swing. If Tyrod, if Tua needs time, you've got Tyrod, so
right.
You can afford to like maybe wait a little bit on him. And like at the very least, I think you have to sort of start the clock on your quarterback. You don't want to be starting over again in 2021 with that crew of players. You know what I mean?
Okay, quickly, do you think with Simmons on the board at six, even with Tua there, that to your point, it's, well, we got Tyrod, we'll work it out, or we think we can work it out. We've got all these veterans around. And then maybe they take Isaiah Simmons to come, you know, complement Derwin James in that defense. See, I don't think they will be, because Tua, just in and of himself, brings them the kind of cachet that they need out there.
And I've heard that, like, if they don't take Tua, it could be a tackle there, actually. And there are some good ones. We've got three on the board. So yep. It could be Becton, you know, like it could be Andrew Thomas, like who's a very safe play there. So it wouldn't totally shock me. All right. So this one's difficult now. This one's tough. Cause all along I've been telling, I've heard Derrick Brown from Auburn, really good player and a clean player, a 4-year player, a guy who, you know what I love about Derrick Brown is that he could have been a top 15 pick last year, comes back to school, and somehow didn't get picked apart. You know how hard that is?
Very hard.
It's very hard to go back to school and like not be picked and wind up being a, like higher pick than you were the year before. So I'm going to grit my teeth on this one.
Mm-hmm.
And Isaiah Simmons is so tempting there. But if I'm Matt Rhule, I'm adding a lineman. I'm playing it safe as I can. I'm going to hit it down the middle of the fairway right here, right? Like that's because that's what you're looking for, your first pick. And you're looking for a guy who, the same way I think signing Christian McCaffrey to that extension, the same way that sends a message like, this is the type of dude we're looking for, right? Like hardest worker in the building, no problem carrying a heavy load. Like we want to send the same sort of message with the first player we take. And that's what I think Derrick Brown is.
Yeah, like, I'm with you.
So with the seventh pick, so we can go through the phases of the Carolina Panthers, select defensive tackle from Auburn, Derrick Brown.
I think you make a great case for him. He's a plug-and-play player. And if you're drafting someone that high and that important a spot, put him in there. There you go. That's a good building block. I think it's a no-brainer. However, you are right. They will be tempted with Simmons. Now, they sort of did the make good to some of the fans in signing McCaffrey long-term and making everybody feel good down there that, okay, our superstar is going to be here. We know Cam is gone. But that will factor into that decision. But I'm with you. They're going Derrick Brown. And then that leads you number eight to Arizona. And, man, oh, man, oh, man. They should go offensive line here. They should. But I think this group has proven that they are tempted by the talent. And with the number eight pick in the 2020 NFL draft, the Arizona Cardinals draft Isaiah Simmons from Clemson. And to me, they're going to fall in love with the talent and everything that they can do with Isaiah Simmons versus doing what I would do if I were running that organization.
Take the tackle.
And I take the tackle. Yep.
And, you know, I think Jedrick Wills would be a nice safe play for them there. Could be a nice safe play for them there where you have your left tackle. You just signed DJ Humphreys. Jedrick Wills would fit in as a right tackle. But I'm with you. I mean, you know, there's a lot you can do with somebody like Isaiah Simmons. And I think that there's a temptation there. When a guy like that falls, it's like, whoa, well, you know, what do we do here? You know, mm-hmm. And so I think Carolina be tempted. Again, like to me, it's like Matt Rhule, like almost have to go like just right in the middle of the fairway with your first one if you're Matt Rhule. You know, Cliff Kingsbury, a year in now. Steve Keim's been there for a while. As much as you'd love to build up that line for Kyler Murray, Simmons might be too much to pass.
Yeah, they're going to sit there and be like, this is a top three rated player in the draft. And they'll be sitting there at eight, and that's where I just think the talent wins out. And again, there's a part of me that doesn't blame them, but they also invested 2 years in a row in a top 10 quarterback, and they need to make sure that guy's protected. And I'll tell you what, if Isaiah Simmons is on the board for Arizona and they take him, this clears things up for Jacksonville pretty easily, does it not?
Yeah.
Because if Simmons is on the board, that's another group that I think, you know, you get into the metrics and stuff like that with Tony Khan, and they look at it and just be like, the value for someone like Simmons at this spot would be too high.
Right. And so I also think, so I'm looking at this now, Jacksonville's one of these trade down teams. And this is like, if we're talking about trades, this is where, and you know, we talked about it earlier in the podcast, mm-hmm. this is where like a Denver or a, like, and I believe Denver's out on Garrett Bowles right now, but a Denver or a Tampa could wind up making their move up to get a tackle to try to get in front of Cleveland and the Jets. But man, this is interesting now because I do believe you got the three quarterbacks, right? So you have four elite defensive players in the draft, right? Mm-hmm. And then I think you have the four tackles, mm-hmm. right? So I think that that's really the group of 11. Javon Kinlaw could sneak in there maybe. One of the receivers could sneak in there maybe. I think Jacksonville would be of a mind to trade down. But Doug Marrone, with the ability right now to sit there and take another offensive lineman to add to Cam Robinson and Juwan Taylor, and that's three tackles. That's mm-hmm. three tackles, all right, that you'd have. So you'd have to move one of them inside. I'm not sure who that'd be. I just think here, knowing who Marrone is, big people beat up little people.
Yes, they do.
He takes the biggest guy in the draft. So with the ninth pick, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Mekhi Becton, offensive tackle, Louisville.
And it's funny because I sit here and say with Arizona, they're going to look at Simmons and salivate. The way you just described it with Doug Marrone, you're exactly right. He's going to look at Mekhi Becton and salivate.
Yeah.
Because if I'm not going prototype necessarily, but dadgum, he's pretty doggone close when you look at him in terms of arm length, the ability to finish, getting his hands on people, footwork. You just got to develop that consistency. And knowing that group down there, and especially Marrone, it's the whole, oh, we'll get it out of him thought process.
Yeah, and I think the kid's going to have to grow up some, and he's going to have to keep the weight off. And those are the big things. You know, but I've heard some Bryant McKinney comparisons. I've heard some Trent Brown comparisons. I've heard some, and obviously these are all very big people. Jason Peters was another name that came up just from the athleticism standpoint. Sort of boom or bust, but I think certainly somebody who they could look at as somebody who could be like the long-term answer for them at left tackle. Then maybe you move like Cam Robinson into guard. All right, 10th pick. Gresh, right. You're up.
So this is – it's who you're taking, right? Are you going Jerick Wills from Alabama, or are you going to – I know some differ on Andrew Thomas a little bit in terms of Georgia. I know you mentioned him a couple of times here, Bert. I'm sure the Jets are going to be like, come on, Cleveland, this thing up for us. Let's go. Let a tackle slide down there. But with the number 10 pick in the 2020 NFL draft, the Cleveland Browns take Jedrick Wills, offensive tackle, Alabama. It seems like a no-brainer. However, the real hook here for Cleveland is that if Odell Beckham Jr. is maybe going out the door, do they look at that crop of wide receivers there and get tempted and start to think, we need an offensive lineman, but boy, that Jerry Jeudy is really good now. I don't think they talk themselves out of it. They need to go O-line like we discussed. But, man, you think about the way you and I have laid this out and the way it's gone, maybe not to the way some have predicted, but our top 10 is pretty similar to a lot of others. And then you're looking at those crop of wide receivers, man.
Yeah.
You're going to, oh, man. Like, Rube's probably got heart palpitations right now.
I think there are two things at play, though, right? Like, number one, I've heard that this is going to be a big man's draft. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because without 30 visits, without private workouts, one thing I've gotten from the scouts, and maybe you can speak to this, the tape's usually a little bit more telling with big people. The tape's usually a little bit more telling with offensive linemen and defensive linemen. And in a year when you've got to rely on the tape a little bit more, things could skew to the big people. Because if you're trying to play it safe, right? So like the thought process is with a receiver, with a corner, with a safety, with a linebacker, there might be more scheme questions. Like, we're projecting him to do this, and he's really doing that. Whereas with linemen, it might be a little bit more clear of an evaluation. You think that's fair?
Yeah, and just to add some context to that, whenever you see a play and you're not watching it from the wide copy or the, the 30,000-foot view, you can lose what a wide receiver may be doing well or how they're getting open or how they're beating someone in a play where the ball doesn't go to them because an offensive lineman might have screwed up. With offensive linemen, it's very easy to tell whether they don't have assignment knowledge or if they've got bad feet and they get beat by somebody pretty quick. Whereas when you're evaluating tight ends, wide receivers, the offensive concept comes into play, whereas with offensive linemen, it's more, well, that guy can't deal with a speed rusher who's lined up at the nine technique because he can't kick slide and get out there quick enough. So it's easier to pinpoint some issues with offensive linemen because the concept doesn't necessarily matter as much. It's more the physicality and the footwork and hand placement, things like that.
And here's the second thing. The second thing is the depth at the receiver position, I think, could wind up hurting some of the top guys. And here's what I mean by that, Gresh. If you're one of these teams, you're the Jets, you're Cleveland, like, say you want another receiver, okay? You're probably going to look at it, you're going to say, there's so much depth this year at receiver, I can wait. I got to get my tackle now. Mm-hmm. I got to get my pass rusher now. I got to get my corner now. But with the receivers, I can potentially wait. And yeah, CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy are great, and Henry Ruggs can fly. Mm-hmm. But you start to like look at the names, Justin Jefferson, Denzel Mims, Brandon Ayuk, Jalen Reagor, LaVisca Chenault, T. Higgins, K.J. Hamler, Michael Pittman, like Lynn Bowden. It's just there's name after name after name after name. There are so many good receivers that I do think that that's part of it too. If you're one of these teams drafting in the top 10, you're thinking to yourself, I can get one in the second round. I can get one in the third round. And I think on top of that too, you look at the recent history, lots of second round receivers have succeeded. Like, look at the recent hitter, mm-hmm. Michael Thomas, like DJ Chark, DK Metcalf, AJ Brown. Second round receivers have done really well of late. So I think there is some merit in the idea of waiting on your receiver if you need one and taking your lineman early.
And the fifth year option becomes a factor for some teams if they want to have that ability, because as we found out with these second round guys, you know, after 4 years, it's, oh boy, you're going to be paying them a little earlier because of the way everything is structured now. But I'm with you. If you're Las Vegas, right, and you're Gruden, what's the difference between Jeudy, Ruggs, and Lamb if you're going to go there? Or do you look at it and say, I've got to add a piece to the defense? And, you know, I'll tell you a guy I love here, Bert. I love Xavier McKinney from Alabama. Yeah. I think somebody
– NFL teams love him too.
and you know what? But to the point, I wonder if a guy like Xavier McKinney, because – really in the first round, he's the only safety on the board. So right. To your point, do people look at it and you start to think, oh, this team might go wide receiver. Oh, but they also need a safety. They can go wide receiver later. Do they put a higher value? Like, does Xavier McKinney end up in the top 10 because someone says, I'm not going to be able to come back around and grab that guy? Maybe he's not a quote-unquote top 10 talent, but the value at the position necessitates drafting him because of the ebb and flow of this first round.
No doubt, no doubt. Well, I can't wait for it. I'm glad our technology held up too. This might be the first time we've done it over Zoom.
Yes.
So here's hoping that the NFL's technology holds up next week too, because I know there are a lot of nervous GMs and coaches that their Microsoft Teams or whatever are going to break down.
Come on. The Albert Breer Network is already breaking this down, right? Don't we have the MMQB virtual team all over this trying to break in? I mean, John Harbaugh made it sound like there's going to be, you know, passcode
hackers,
stuff, bank statements and stuff like that on there. I mean, he made it sound
I'll tell
like
you what, though. I'll tell you what,
bring
though.
Bring down the whole organization.
Gresh, you know what, though? If you're a hacker, what better way to go viral on Twitter than to steal somebody's big board?
No,
if you can steal a team's board, like, holy crap. Like, I'd be a little nervous about it if I were one of these teams.
I mean, all of a sudden, it's like, and ladies and gentlemen, to the basement for Roger Goodell. Then the next thing you know, all of a sudden, like, somebody comes up in like clown face and is like, goes out on national television. And not that anybody's rooting for any of this, Bert. I mean, come on now. We want this thing to go off clean. I am happy to have the live entertainment at this point in time, but you're right. Somebody out there is cooking something up. There's no question.
No question. All right, Gresh, that was a lot of fun. Appreciate you coming out. We'll get you back soon.
Bye, bud.
All right. Always appreciate Gress coming out. The conversation is always good, and we were able to kind of give you guys some insight into the way these teams will run the draft a little less than a week from now. And now I'm going to get into your questions. You guys know how this works. Obviously, since the virus hit, we're doing it a little bit differently. We can't do the kind of
same playback with the voicemails and everything else that we've done in the past. So we're going back old school again to the six-pack format. You guys know how that works. On Tuesdays, Wednesdays, this week, Thursday, I put the call out for questions on Twitter. You ask, I answer. If I pick your question, you get a like there on Twitter, and I tell you what you want to hear. Question number one from Tyler Schmidt. That's at TeachGeek90. Which draft quarterback would be a good fit for the Colts to develop behind Rivers this season? Tyler, I'm not sure the Colts take a quarterback this year. They have the 2 second-round picks. They obviously don't have a first-rounder. Might they take someone in the third or fourth round, something like that? It wouldn't shock me. But I think what they did in moving that pick is sort of a signal to you that they are okay waiting for a year to go and find their quarterback of the future. And next year, you got Trevor Lawrence coming out. You have Justin Fields likely coming out. And we're not even talking about who else could wind up as part of this group. Remember, like last year at this time, no one thought Joe Burrow was a first rounder, let alone first overall. The year before that, Kyler Murray wasn't even a starter, wound up going first overall. The year before that, Baker Mayfield was seen as maybe a third or fourth rounder. He wound up going first overall. So you've got Fields and Lawrence already, and then on top of that, you might have a couple of guys who worked their way out of relative obscurity and find their way onto the big stage of the NFL draft. So it would not surprise me if the Colts sat tight this year. And I think the signing of Rivers is sort of, to me, like a signal of that, right? Like the benefit you get in bringing Rivers in over somebody like Brady, and this is the way that they've sort of thought about this all along, bringing in Rivers, you can keep the train on the tracks. They like what they built the last 3 years. Rivers comes in. He has obviously background with Frank Reich, background with Nick Sirianni. And so he comes into this situation. They can sort of run the program the way they've been running it, run the offense the way they've been running it, and buy themselves an extra year or two to find their long-term quarterback of the future. Question number two, this is from Doc Flynn. That's my good friend, Jess Flynn. It's at Jess Didi. How does the reality that there may not be anything that looks like a real NFL season this year affect the draft, i.e. trading up, trading down, conserving assets, business as usual? Doc, I would tell you that I think teams are going to be a little more risk averse this year. I think that part of it, like, to me is just no 30 visits, less medicals, no private workouts. So I think that, like, when you look at like the linemen are the ones that stand to benefit here. I mentioned the 8 offensive linemen, offensive tackles off the top. I think even like a Cesar Ruiz from Michigan, a Lloyd Cushenberry from LSU, even those guys can sneak into the back half of the first round as interior linemen. And so, you know, I think that the big men benefit that way, and then it's going to be a little more risk averse. If you've got injury history, if you've got character questions, I think that becomes a little bit more of a problem for you. The fact that there may not be a season, I think, probably makes it a little more palatable to take a redshirt guy, a guy who might be a little hurt or a guy who might take time to develop. I also think some teams may wind up trading into next year because they'll say, well, you know, if we're not getting anything out of our rookies this year and we don't have full research on these guys, then why don't we trade our picks into next year? So I think some teams could aggressively look to trade picks into 2021. That certainly could be part of it. And then the third part of it, the next piece of it, which I think you may see over the course of the next few days, teams are going to start to look and say, we can't rely on rookies. We cannot rely on rookies to fill our holes right now, especially if it's a shortened season, if they've got a shortened training camp. So I think what you'll see is maybe some teams that exited free agency with existing holes, wind up kind of fishing around for veteran solutions maybe next week. Question number three is from Adam at Anase 815. The Dolphins pick a quarterback will be, I don't know, Adam. I'm not going to tell you that I know. All I can tell you is that there is a widespread perception out there right now that they are going to wind up with Justin Herbert. Obviously, Joe Burrow won't be on the table. There's that buzz out there that maybe they aren't wild about Tua because of the medicals. There's, you know, where where Brian Flores is from, which, you know, is again a place that where vent measurables are important, and if there are mitigating factors with a smaller player, it can be a problem. I just think everything points right now to Justin Herbert winding up on the Dolphins. I'm not saying for sure that it's going to happen, but it makes a lot of sense. Question number four from Timbo Slice, that's at Saints King 1996. Queen or Murray for the Saints? I don't know that either of them make it there, Timbo. We were just talking about the Dolphins. Like, the Dolphins, I think, could wind up taking a linebacker with one of their second, one of their secondary first-round picks, either at 18 or 26. So, like, to me, that would be one where I think you look at it and say, okay, maybe Patrick Queen or Kenneth Murray come off the board there. You know, I would say, like, and here's like Baltimore at 28, would they look at an inside linebacker? I think there are a lot of chances there. There's a lot of like opportunity there for linebackers to go. So I don't know that either Queen or Murray make it to the Saints. And I actually may have messed that up. I think the Ravens are actually picking behind the Saints. Is that right? You guys can look that up. Question number five. This is from Fish. That's at Colts Fisher. Do you think it will be smart to trade down for future picks given the unknown of this offseason and possibility of no season? I know it seems crazy, but usually you can get good value on future picks, follow-up trades, especially involving those future picks happen. I do think trades are going to happen. I think trades are going to have to be set up a little bit better this year, more in advance this year because of all the technical stuff. The way NFL teams usually work on draft day, there's going to be a half dozen guys in most buildings that are assigned to making calls based on their own connections. And so, you know, as things get crazy, you'll have somebody who's responsible for calling team X, a guy who's responsible for calling team Y, a guy who's responsible for calling team Z. It's going to be a little more difficult based on the logistics this year to set all of that up. And so, you know, I think that it's going to mean there's going to need to be more groundwork laid next week. And it's going to be harder the deeper you get into the first round. And then, you know, the deeper you get into Friday and Saturday, where more things are happening on the fly. So, yeah, I think the trade, and especially when you get into the second and third day where the clock is shorter. So I think trades are going to be more difficult to make. I do think trades will happen. And I do think, like I said earlier, that there's a good chance that you'll see teams trading into 2021. Finally, question number six. This is from Jorge Dingo at Jorge Dingo. What do we got here? Any new insight on the Trent Williams trade situation? Here's what I would tell you about the Trent Williams trade situation. I think the Redskins have actually played this all right. He's still on their roster. And I do believe that there's a chance that there's a run on tackles early. And is it possible that, say, the Jets or the Browns wind up sitting there at 10 or 11 and saying to themselves, the tackles we like are gone, and maybe make that phone call? I certainly think it could happen. Or it could happen after the draft, where somebody comes away from the draft and says to themselves, we're not completely happy with where we're at, so let's take a 2021 pick and flip him for Trent Williams. So I think from that standpoint, the Redskins were smart to wait. They have waited this out. We'll see what happens. I do have a bonus question for you guys, too. This is from Ian Fitzsimmons. That's at Ian Fitz, ESPN. When was the last time you wore anything other than sweats or shorts? Fitz, the joke is on you. I'm wearing jeans, brother. That's my way of getting myself in working order every day now. I'll wear sweatpants at night, but during the day, I try to put on something that's going to make me feel like I'm at least like sort of at work. So I actually get work done. So like I said, Fitz, if you're wearing sweatpants all day, more power to you. That's not the way I roll, at least right now. Maybe a couple weeks from now we get further into this and I change my mind on that. Appreciate you guys coming out as always. Please send me all your feedback. You know, you guys know where to get me. You can get me on any of my social channels. At Albert Breer on Twitter, at Albert R. Breer on Facebook, at Albert_Breer on Instagram. We are just 6 days away from the NFL draft. We're going to have some cool stuff coming for you on the pod next week. We're going to have Periscopes coming for you. All that stuff's coming up. Again, The feedback will tell us where we want to go. The feedback will tell me where we can go with the show once we get out into kind of the wilderness of the post-draft world with everything else that's happening out here. Would love to include you guys more in that as we go forward, especially like if there's guests you guys want to have, want me to have on more often, guests that you guys want me to look, go out and get. Let me know on all of that. Again, on all my social channels, I'm not hard to find. And always remember to listen to all the MMQB podcasts, the MMQB NFL podcasts. We're all on one feed now. Gary's podcast on Monday mornings. You get the Weekside podcast twice a week. We got our Week in Review podcast on Fridays. And, of course, the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, where we bring in big-name guests every week to talk through all of the things that are going on in the NFL. Again, we're all on one feed right now, the MMQB NFL podcast feed. And, of course, there's always the MMQB NFL news feed where, you know, you get your bite-sized news for the day. That's also in the same place. You can find the MMQB NFL podcast. You can get us wherever you guys get your shows. Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. Next week, the NFL Draft will be here, and we'll be here for you. We'll see you guys then.